From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. Trump administration officials say there will be no more conditions imposed on North Korea before a first-ever meeting of the two nations' leaders, despite and beyond North's promise not to resume nuclear testing and missile flights or publicly criticize U.S.-South Korean military exercises. Deputy White House spokesman Raj Shaw said President Trump's policies regarding North Korea and its leader Kim Jong-un are nothing like the failed policies of previous administrations.
Our policy is pressure. It's pressure from our partners and allies around the world, pressure through the United Nations, pressure through China. These have had an impact, and it's impacted Kim Jong-un's behavior. It's impacted his conduct. So we're hoping that this pressure campaign, which is not going to relent in the coming months, is changing North Korea's behavior.
Trump administration officials have credited toughened economic sanctions imposed by the United Nations and pushed by the United States with helping bring Kim to the brink of negotiations. Chinese lawyers, lawmakers that is, have voted with near unanimous approval to amend the country's constitution and have given President Xi Jinping a mandate to stay in office indefinitely. A controversial amendment to scrap a two-term limit on the office of the president was approved. The amendments passed smoothly in the National People's Congress with only 5 dissenting votes. The election in Sierra Leone is to succeed a term-limited president, Ernest Bai Koroma, is said to be too close to call, even after 75% of the votes have been counted. Main opposition leader Julius Maada Bio is running neck and neck with Samora Kamara. This is VOA News. Syrian government forces divided the rebel-occupied eastern Ghouta enclave outside Damascus, dealing a major setback to rebels and threatening to exacerbate an already dire humanitarian situation at the doors of the country's capital. The government's advance follows 3 weeks of intensive ground and air assaults on rebels and civilians trapped inside eastern Ghouta, which has killed more than 1,100 people, according to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. VOA asked Tufts University scholar Adam Salul if it could be the beginning of the end of the 7-year civil war in Syria. He said no.
The Syrian conflict is entering a longer, more protracted chapter of the conflict. We're seeing the freezing of the battlefield as a result of the deconfliction zones that have been agreed upon by Russia, Turkey, and Iran.
Russia's military command in Syria is negotiating with rebels to let them leave eastern Ghouta, but one of the two leading factions issued a statement saying it will refuse to surrender or to leave. British health officials are saying traces of a nerve agent used in the suspected attempted murder of a Russian spy in Britain were found in a pub and a restaurant he visited. Sally Davies is Britain's chief medical officer.
We have now learned that there has been some trace contamination by the nerve agent in both the Mill pub and Zizi restaurant in Salisbury. I am confident that this has not harmed the health of anyone who was in the Mill pub or Zizi's restaurant. However, some people are concerned that prolonged long-term exposure to these substances may, over weeks and particularly months, give rise to health problems.
Hospital officials in the city of Salisbury said there is no evidence of a wider attack on the town aside from 3 people who've been hospitalized since the attack on former Russian spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia, both of whom are hospitalized in critical condition. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has resumed his normal schedule in Kenya after canceling events the day before because he was not feeling well. Tillerson laid a wreath at the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi at a ceremony to honor those killed and injured in a bombing there 20 years ago. After meeting with Nairobi President Uhuru Kenyatta last week, Tillerson hailed the political reconciliation between Kenyatta and the opposition leader Raila Odinga. Get more news at voanews.com. I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Monday, the 12th day of March, and here are some of the stories we are covering. With 75% of Sierra Leone's election results announced, it appears a runoff may be likely.
According to the progressive results that have been released, the candidate for the All People's Congress Party has 42.57%, while the main opposition, the All People's Party candidate, has 43.33%.
But Masekwa is the spokesman for the National Elections Commission of Sierra Leone. Meanwhile, an official of the opposition SLPP will tell us why his party has asked the commission for a recount. The United Nations says about 8 million people are suffering from acute hunger in the DRC. And Raila Odinga is under fire for his meeting with President Uhuru Kenyatta.
You cannot conduct public affairs on the back of martyrs of the struggle. Raila Odinga sacrificed more than 400 innocent civilians between August 8 and now. They died for him.
Miguna Miguna is the deported lawyer for Raila Odinga. At least 16 people were killed Sunday in Rwanda when a lightning struck a church. And a Gambian government spokesman says a strike by medical doctors is illegal. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Percent of results from last week's Sierra Leone presidential election has been announced, and it looks like a runoff is likely. National Elections Commission of Sierra Leone spokesman Albert Masekwai says the latest results announced put Sierra Leone People's Party candidate, retired Brigadier Julius Madabio, in a virtual tie with former Foreign Minister Samura Kamara of the ruling All People's Congress Party at 43% each. Sierra Leone's election says the election laws say a candidate must get 55% of the vote before he or she is declared the winner of any presidential election. Spokesman Masekwai says the commission is not ready to declare a runoff yet, with 25% of results outstanding and with the SLPP demanding a recount in some areas.
According to the progressive results that have been released, the candidate for the All People's Congress Party has 42.57%, while the main opposition, the All People's Party candidate, has 43.33%. And looking at the figures, these two candidates are actually distant ahead of others, because the third candidate in the line is way below on 6.95%.
Albert, according to your Elections Commission rules and regulations, does this mean now there's a likelihood of a possible runoff?
Well, the commission at this point will not comment on the issue of a possible runoff, because we still have 25% of progressive results to be announced. And that is a significant figure that will determine the outcome of the presidential election. If we go to the laws of Sierra Leone, it states that after the final results have been announced by the National Returning Officer, it is only when one candidate polls 55% of the election results, or if no candidate is able to get that percentage, then a runoff is inevitable.
So when does the commission expect to give the next results?
At this juncture, we have issues that have come up regarding recount of our ballot boxes in some communities. But hopefully, according to the words of the Chief Electoral Commissioner, the final set of 25% will be announced as soon as possible. Because at the moment, the commission, through the district offices, are doing a recount into some of the ballot papers where issues and concerns have been registered. So the commission is meeting with political parties, their agents, observers, to ensure that recounts where necessary are held. That is what the commission is doing. It is after these recounts, then the commission will tally the outcome of the recount results. And from that, the commission is able to give the final set of the 25%.
You said some issues have arisen that are making you to do some recount. What are the issues?
First and foremost, the law makes provision for dissatisfied candidates, political parties, and their agents to ask for a recount, because parties are of the opinion that the counts that they acquired is not reflective of the votes that they believe they've got. So as a result, we are doing a recount into some of these areas. In some districts, it is actually minimal, the number of recounts into the ballot papers. But because it is their right and they have asked for it, the commission is magnanimous enough within the laws of Sierra Leone to say we will grant you the opportunity for us to do a recount in the presence of your political party agent. At the end of the day, whatever is the outcome will form part of the basis of the announcement of the remaining 25% of the progressive results that the commission will eventually announce the entire final results for the presidential election.
Thank you very much for speaking with us on Daybreak Africa.
You're welcome.
Abo Masekwa is spokesman of the National Elections Commission of Sierra Leone. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. A spokesman for Sierra Leone's main opposition party, the Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP, says the party has asked the National Elections Commission to recount the vote from some districts of the country because the SLPP is not satisfied with the overall vote counting process. Lahai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the SLPP.
We have expressed our concerns to the National Electoral Commissioner that we are dissatisfied with the conduct of the elections, especially the counting process and the process after the counting. We found out that results are arriving at tally centers in brown envelopes instead of the tea bags, which were agreed upon as the best means of securing those results. Also, we have instances of blank RRFs in our possession and the mismatch of polling centers and constituencies on Saturday RRFs. These RRFs are the reconciliation result forms that comes from the polling station after signing by the polling agents. And we found out that some of the RRFs were not even signed by party agents. And in most part of the Pujahong district, we found out that RRFs were not given to our party agents so that we can know our results and try to reconcile them with what is coming out from both NEC and the Independent Radio Network. We also find out that the NEC tally machines, which were pre-programmed to reject incorrect data, has been rejecting these data. However, we've been assured in that regard that there will be a recount of those boxes whose RRFs have been rejected by the pre-programmed tally machines.
But Suleiman, according to the latest results from the Elections Commission, the SLPP seems to be ahead. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. So let's put it this way. Assuming that the figures hold as they are you expecting a runoff or are you expecting to win on the first ballot?
We're expecting a runoff. The results that are coming out, 75% of the results are here, and it looks all but likely that there will be a runoff.
So let me put the question. I think I may have asked you this question before now. This is the time for wielding and dealing. Are you looking forward to wielding and dealing with the other parties that did not reach the level of your party?
We have not got to that bridge yet. At least we are still in the counting process, and the results are still coming out, and we're still doing recounts across the country. First and foremost, we want to know how credible the elections were to establish that fact. Then later on, we will do our own internal postmortem. But at the moment, we're not thinking about dealing or winning at this stage. When we get to that stage, I mean, we would be able to discuss it. This will be a decision for the party. The party will have to take a decision on that.
Suleiman, it's always nice to talk with you, and thank you very much. Look forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you very much for having me.
Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. In Kenya, the man who swore in opposition leader Raila Odinga as the people's president and was deported to Canada as a result is now condemning Odinga for meeting with President Uhuru Kenyatta and agreeing to work with the government. Miguna Miguna says Raila has betrayed the millions of Kenyans who supported him and the hundreds who lost their lives for him. He says he and other leaders of the opposition National Super Alliance, NASA, were never consulted about Raila's meeting with President Kenyatta. Miguna described both President Kenyatta and Mr. Odinga as two desperate people who have lost relevance in the Kenyan political dispensation.
Uhuru Kenyatta is an illegitimate president. When he meets Raila Odinga, they two are meeting as two individuals. They did not consult their supporters. They did not consult their parties. They had no structured discussion. There were no issues that affect the people of Kenya on the table. There was no public participation, and they did not state the duration of time that their so-called dialogue will take. They did not name a mediator. They did not state the end game. So it was a very silly exercise by two desperate individuals who have lost relevance in the Kenyan political dispensation, as far as I can see.
When you say two desperate individuals, those are the terms you used to describe Uhuru the last time I spoke with you. Now, it seems that you are placing your leader, Raila, in that same basket.
Yes, I am, because I swore Raila Odinga in on January 30th as the people's president, as a result of which I was abducted at my house and held incommunicado and tortured for 5 days before being released, then forcefully removed, sent into exile. Raila Odinga has not been to my house to see the damage that was caused by the despotic individuals or the regime. Raila Odinga did not consult me, nor did he consult his party. Now, clearly, after my deportation, the so-called deportation, it appears as if either it was choreographed between the two individuals or Raila Odinga got recruited into this exercise because I announced that I'm coming back on the 26th of this month, and he believes that the revolutionary forces, the youth of Kenya, will take a very radical position on electoral injustice, the issue of extrajudicial killings, the issue of violations of human rights, disrespect for court orders, and the whole issue of governance and accountability. And they feel threatened. And now they got together in a cynical chit-chat, purporting it to be a unity. There are no Kenyans who are celebrating.
Listening to you, it seems to me that you and the others feel betrayed. What do you think might have been the cause of this abrupt about turn by Raila? We know that the U.S. Secretary of State Tillerson was in Kenya. What do you think happened?
It has nothing to do with Tillerson's visit. As a matter of fact, before Tillerson came, he said, I am only going to meet Uhuru Kenyatta. I'm not meeting Raila Odinga. So it was very clear. And he has not met Raila Odinga. In fact, he has not held any meetings. He went back. He said he was sick. So there are no meetings that have been held. You cannot conduct public affairs on the back of martyrs of the struggle. Raila Odinga sacrificed more than 400 innocent civilians between August 8th and now. They died for him. Msando, the director of technology, IT, at the Electoral Commission, died because he refused to release the password for the KIMS kits and the electronic system so that we could have a credible election. Raila will have to answer to why Msando died. Raila will have to answer to Kenyans why on November 17th, when he returned from the United States, 18 young men died, brutalized by the police. That has not changed. Mikuna is still in exile, forced exile. What does Raila Odinga have to say about that? That is the question.
Miguna Miguna is the deported lawyer for Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga. You're speaking with me from Toronto in Canada. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Monday, March 12. Daybreak Africa time is 18 minutes past the hour. The United Nations says hunger is soaring in the Democratic Republic of Congo, mainly because of fighting and widespread displacement in Kasai and the Tanganyika in central and eastern DRC. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United Nations reports 7.7 million people in DRC, mainly in rural areas, are suffering from acute hunger. This is a 30% increase since 2016, and the situation on the ground does not augur well for the future. Conditions are particularly grim in the Kasai region. Spokeswoman for the World Food Program, Bettina Lusher, tells VOA 3.2 million people there, or one in four, are suffering from severe food shortages.
Malnourished children at risk of dying are 300,000 at risk of dying. Just think of that, 300,000 little kids. We have 762,000 people that are still displaced.
The most worrying aspect, says Lusher, is that the DRC has fallen off the international agenda and aid agencies are not receiving the money they need to provide life-saving assistance. She says WFP is so severely underfunded, it was forced to cut food rations in half for beneficiaries in Kasai in November.
The hard thing is how people are affected. People sometimes have fled into the bush. People have died there because there was just no aid coming. So I think it's a really, really tough one.
The United Nations has appealed for $168 billion to provide humanitarian assistance for 10.5 million people in DRC this year. The response so far has been tepid. In hopes of stimulating greater support, the UN plans to hold a large international donors pledging conference in Geneva in mid-April. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
At least 16 people were killed Sunday in Rwanda and 140 others wounded when a lightning struck a Seventh-day Adventist church. Julia Nakatagwa is a member of the Rwanda House of Representatives. She says her country is prone to lightning strikes at this time of the year.
All I can say is that lightning all over is common within mountainous areas in the tropics. And Rwanda being a high altitude area, it's not uncommon. Almost we get incidents happening whenever it's the rainy season. So much as it is tragic, but it's not the first time it's happening.
As you said, this is not the first time happening. Last year, 18 people in different parts of the country were killed. The year before, killed 30 people and injured 61, including 48 livestock. What is being done about this?
I'm not so sure about the statistics, the correctness of the statistics, but I know that we usually get incidents. But the authorities are trying as much as possible to sensitize the general public to understand the scientific basis of lightning strikes and to keep away from whatever makes them prone, like keeping off water. If it's raining, try and get shelter. Get away from water, don't stay in contact with water, try to be away from metals, anything that conducts electricity, you know, water, metals, sharp points, you know, to try and stay indoors, switch off your radio, disconnect electric appliances. That kind of sensitization is being carried out by the authorities, especially the ministry in charge of disaster preparedness. So the message goes out into the countryside, the general public. But like I said, our area is prone. So however much you say, it doesn't mean that you will make it completely.
First of all, has the government said anything about this latest lightning strike?
Oh, yeah. I believe you must have picked your news from the governor. The governor is a representative of the, is a high government official in the province.
I was speaking to a colleague in our Kenya-Rwanda division, and she was quoting a stringer there who said that maybe someone there, either the local authority there, seemed to be blaming the church, that the church did not take enough precaution, saying that people should not attend the church because the church did not take enough precaution.
No. I think there's a confusion here. The church cannot take a precaution when it's raining. The church as a public building, according to government policy, is supposed to have those rods on top of it that deflect the lightning.
Juliana Katengwa is a member of the Rwanda House of Representatives. She was speaking with me from the capital, Kigali. The Gambian government says a medical doctor's strike that began last week is illegal. The doctors went on strike to protest a comment by the Minister of Health, who accused the doctors of using government-supplied medicine to start their own pharmacies. Information Minister Demba Jowell says the strike is illegal because medical doctors in the Gambia are considered essential government employees.
There has been a strike of some doctors, not all the doctors actually are on strike. But as far as the government is concerned, the strike is definitely not official because there is a procedure that doctors who are essential workers are supposed to pass through before they can go on strike. But that didn't happen in this case. So the government is definitely very much concerned about what is going on.
So are you saying your government does not recognize the strike?
Well, it's not a question of not recognizing the strike, because that is a kind of a set of complete. If they are on strike, they are on strike. Even if the government doesn't recognize it, they are already on strike. But what I'm saying is it hasn't gone through the normal procedure of going on strike for essential workers like doctors. So, I mean, what the government would do is probably engage them, you know, and see how best we can talk this over and, you know, just try to find an amicable solution for it.
So, Minister, let me ask you, I think part of the doctor's concern was this statement allegedly made by your Minister of Health, in reality accusing the doctors of stealing government-purchased medicine. What does your government know? Did the minister really make those comments?
I actually spoke to the minister herself, and she said she was kind of not accurately quoted by the newspaper that reported the thing. She referred to pilfering of medical items and something, but not exactly how it was written in the newspaper. So she was slightly misquoted. That's what she told me.
You just said that the government does not believe the strike is legal. So what would the government do about the doctors being on strike?
We'll try to see how best we can be able to talk to the doctors and see how best we can be able to find a way forward, because the strike is definitely affecting the very poor people of this country. I mean, those who can afford it can go to the private medical doctors and clinics and all. But the poor people cannot afford that. So, any strike by the doctors in the public service is definitely going to affect the very poor people of this country. And I'm sure the doctors wouldn't like such a thing as well. So we'll sit down and see how best we can be able to go around this topic.
Mr. Minister, thank you very much. It's so nice to talk with you, sir.
Thank you.
That's Gambian Information Minister Demba Jao. He was speaking with me from the capital, Banjul. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson Omahale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with former France and Real Madrid star Christian Carambo, who says he's confident that the Nigerian Super Eagles is capable of doing great things at the 2018 Summer FIFA World Cup in Russia. Carambo, who accompanied the FIFA World Cup trophy to Nigeria on a four-day tour, predicted that the three-time African champions will be one of the standout teams at the 2018 World Cup.
Big names, big talents, and so far today there is a Obi Mikel with his team, and we wish the Super Eagles the best, and of course to bring back this trophy, because they are talented, they have experience, and of course one of the coach, Mr. Gareth Rowe, I know very well. He has been in France also. He did educate many big talent as Zinedine Zidane or Djougari in Bordeaux. So far I hope that the Super Eagles will be and will do for Africa the summum, and one objective is to bring back the World Cup here in Africa, so far in Nigeria.
The Cameroon Football Federation, FECAFOOT, has launched a tender for the recruitment of the head coach for the Indomitable Lions of Cameroon to replace Hugo Bruce. The federation parted ways with Hugo Bruce late last year. The 65-year-old guided Cameroon to the 2017 African Cup of Nations AFCON title in Gabon. The post became vacant in December last year when Bruce lost his job for several reasons, including failure to qualify the African champions for the 2018 World Cup in Russia. Staying with football news, irrepressible Al Ahly are just one point away from securing a third straight Egyptian Premier League title after an early goal gave them a 1-0 victory over Enapi at the Cairo's Petrosport Stadium on Sunday. Central defender Ayem Asharaf struck as early as the third minute as Ahly chalked up a 15th consecutive win, which put them within touching distance of a record-extending 40th league triumph. The Red Devils are now on top of the table with 75 points, a staggering 22 points ahead of a second place Ismaili. In volleyball news, Rwanda Revenue Authority Volleyball Club will face Prisons of Kenya in the quarterfinals of the ongoing African Women Club Championships in Cairo, Egypt, later today. Dorcas Ndasaba's RRA defeated Nkumba University of Uganda in straight sets 3-love to qualify to the last eight, finishing second behind host Harley in Group A. Prisons of Kenya progressed after beating Aegis from Cameroon 3-love. It will be the first meeting between RRA Prisons. In 2016 in Tunisia, RRA lost 3-love to another Kenyan side, Pipeline. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, March 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton in Washington, hoping you have a productive week.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.